We'll hear our next case, United States v. Battle, number 20-1042. And Mr. Korbanix, we'll hear from you first.
Good morning. Michael Korbanix. I represent Jamar Battle. Also present is Joel Silberman, who is pursuant to CJA working with me on this case.
Great.
Let me mention at the outset, I'm the one who asked for argument in this case. I'm not interested in the Rahafe issue. I'm interested in the prosecutorial misconduct issue.
As well as I am. I will be very brief unless the court asks further questions. I hope in my submission I laid out my reasoning and my feeling for the cumulative effect of all this. So rather than go over that again ad nauseum, I prepared to address the court with any questions if they have any.
Okay.
I was found your discussion very thorough, and my questions are more for your opponent rather than for you.
And I should have saved more rebuttal time.
I suppose an issue here is how did the government violate the district court's order when it actually didn't mention the age of LW?
The word was referenced in the order.
I mean, during the trial, it was more of child or holding the hand of her dad.
Exactly.
But I guess you can argue that it was the spirit of the order that was violated, not necessarily the terms.
No, it was the terms. The second part of the term said, I will not allow you, you're not allowed to make reference to the victim or the victim's age. Reference, child, holding hands, all those things which I listed ad nauseum may not seem like a big deal, singularly. But things as they get support and repeated gain less resistance, have more prejudicial value. And I think that, as it progressed, is how the violation deprived my client a right of a fair trial.
And there were objections to the use of that language, right?
There were objections to the use of that language. There were objections used, I like to think, but then again, I'm arguing my own case, were reasonable because as a trial attorney, you have to make decisions. They said it in opening. Do I really want to highlight that now? What I'm saying is prejudicial. I'm going to jump up in front of a jury and tell them that I object. So maybe you hope it slides. Then the testimony comes. And one of my objections, when I finally did go to sidebar, said, and I stated and preserved all those objections, when I said, I have let this go. And now I am saying that it's time the court step in. And the court did. And then the court had to keep pulling them back. So I will, if there's any other questions.
Anything else? Anything more? All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Stephen G. Sanders on behalf of the United States, the appellee in this matter. Let me go right to the issue that you're interested in, and I'll take it in two stages. The first is, did we violate the in limine ruling? And the answer to that is no. The in limine ruling did not forbid either party from mentioning the age of the victim. And let me just explain and emphasize, before the first juror was sworn, and this is in Mr. Korbanix's brief, right? A statement was read to the jury, the prospective jury pool, what this case is about. And he quotes it in full. That's his statement of facts for his brief. On page 5 of the defense brief, block quote, the first full paragraph, this is what the prospective jurors heard. It is further alleged that one of the bullets inadvertently struck a girl who was walking with her father. She sustained a bullet wound to the leg and was subsequently treated for her injuries. Now, every prospective juror heard that. On the record at the pretrial conference, the day before jury selection, Judge Martini said, I understand the parties have an agreed upon statement, right? Mr. Korbanix, yes, we've agreed on it. No problem with it being read to the jury. So even before the first juror is sworn, the jury already knows that a young girl, because it's referred to as a girl.
They know a girl.
A girl.
They didn't know young girl, no girl holding the hand.
Well, but I don't think there's an issue with the girl holding the hand, right?
Well, that's, I mean, when you think of a child walking along with a father, when you say holding the father's hand, frankly, I think of a little girl, because big girls don't want to hold hands. They want to skip along ahead.
Okay, well, even if that's so, Your Honor, let me point to a second fact that makes this a little revisionist history by the defense. At the time that the primary witness, Mr. Molina, testified to what he saw, right, he also testified that he called 911, and he asked and he said why he called 911. The prosecutor then plays the 911 tape for the jury, right? And Mr. Korbanich was asked before the 911 tape was played, he said, and does it, you know, unless there's any issues, he says, no objection, Judge, I've heard the tape. That's at appendix page 142. On that tape, Mr. Molina is heard saying, the reason I ran back to my apartment and called 911 is because I didn't think it was right that a little girl got shot, that a little girl got hurt. So that came in without objection, and not only without objection, but strategically, because Mr. Korbanich wanted to use to his advantage the fact that Mr. Molina, on that call, said he didn't know who the shooter was, right?
Well, what about the stipulation that the age of the girl would not be mentioned? I mean, is that nothing then? Is that, does it have no effect?
I'm not saying it has no effect. I'm saying if Mr. Korbanich thought that the use of the word child or its derivatives, children, was barred by that order, it was up to him to object or to seek clarification of it. There were numerous...
And so then, if he didn't object, then the stipulation was no longer valid at all?
It's not a stipulation. I think that then there's a disagreement between the government and the defense over what the terms of that order meant. But there was, as I cited in my brief, there were numerous times where the parties were asked about, and it was very difficult for Mr. Moore, the father of the victim, to discuss what he was doing that day, right, walking through that scene with about five kids, right? And he even said, I was going back to my place to get my older one and my younger one. So he had kids that were older and younger than the shooting victim here. There was no effort by the defense to say that should be sanitized, we should only talk about persons. And in fact, what he's done on appeal is to try to rewrite the scope of the order and to make it look as if all these objections were preserved when he got up once, and even the objection...
What about all the objections?
His objection one time was to the mention of the use of the word stroller. And Judge Martini said, no, that's not the victim, that's okay. But then he said to the prosecutor, you don't need to go further, move on.
And there were no other objections?
His only other objection was to the fact that an ambulance was called.
So we're reviewing for plain error?
Yes, you are. And in fact, the cumulative error claim was not even raised in the Rule 33 motion. So this is a plain error case.
So there were only two objections to the use of the word child?
There were no objections to the use of the word child. There was an objection, from my recollection of the record, to the fact that the victim's father mentioned that he was walking and pushing a stroller. And at that point, Mr. Korbanich went to sidebar and said and objected. And Judge Martini said, no, the stroller is not the victim. That's okay. But he warned the prosecutors at that point to stay away from that. What he did object to, like I said, was to the ambulance being come, and Judge Martini said, you don't need to go there because then you're implying it's a serious shooting. And that's what was, according to Judge Martini's own words, the focus of his order. But since we're in plain error land, and if we're going to analyze this, let's look at the strength of the evidence versus what would have happened in a trial if we want to grant Mr. Korbanich that there should have been no mention of the word child, right? At least the fact that someone was shot with that firearm, which was never recovered, is directly probative of the essential element of the offense, that there was a firearm as defined by federal law, right, capable of producing a projectile. And when you don't have the firearm, the best evidence of that other than an eyewitness, and the video only shows a muzzle flash, right? You can't tell that that person's holding a firearm in the video. So the fact that a shot was fired, people heard shots, and that someone was wounded by a projectile is essential to the government's case. So let's imagine we had put on a case where the only reference was to someone getting hurt, right? That is still enormously prejudicial, and in a sense, it hurts the defendant's case, right? But it's, but that,
but
it's,
it, but it's meant to. A little girl hurts it even more.
But the increment,
quote, little girl, or a quote, a little, a girl holding her father's hand.
Well, the incremental value of that prejudice, I submit, is minimal. And let me again discuss the strength of the evidence here, right? We had the text messages between Mr. Battle and Ms. Todd, right? Where we know they're quarreling. Then she gets out of the car and goes to the apartment. She hears gunshots. She doesn't see who fired them, but she opines without objection that she thinks Mr. Battle fired him based on his earlier threats. Then afterwards, she texts him and said, "You really scared me back there." And what does he do? He doesn't say, "I don't know what you're talking about." He says, you tried to play me with your friend, so that's what it is. Sum and substance. That was his response. So that's an admission. And then we have him talking to Mr. Vauders later, and that can't be a coincidence. The car he jumped into, Mr. Molina identified as a car he had worked on and identified Mr. Vauders as the owner of that car, and sure enough, Mr. Battle is caught on the jail recording talking to him later. And of course, we see the video, which shows the shooting as described by Mr. Molina. Mr. Molina knows Mr. Battle and identifies him as the one who fired the shots toward Tracy Avenue. So my submission here is that even if we were to grant that there shouldn't have been a reference to the word child or to something that suggested that it was someone of tender years, the fact that someone was injured, was an innocent bystander, and was injured by a gunshot, which would have come in any trial of this sort where the gun wasn't recovered, then there can't be an effect, you know, a reasonable likelihood of a different verdict. And if I can go to just prong four, which of the plain error test, right, which says it has to, not granting a remedy would undermine confidence in the outcome, undermine outcome confidence in the judiciary, right? The fact that Mr. Corbanics and Mr. Battle allowed the prospective jurors to hear that a girl walking with her father was injured by a bullet before the first juror was sworn, and the fact that he allowed the 911 tape to come into evidence with Mr. Molina saying, "I didn't think it was right that little girl got hurt," right, undermines any suggestion that confidence in the judiciary would be undermined by not granting a remedy here. He allowed strategically the jury to hear that because he wanted to impeach Mr. Molina. So he wanted out of that tape what he wanted to get. He never asked that the tape be sanitized. And that strategic decision now he shouldn't be able to change course and ask this court for a remedy.
Well, I mean, it seems that these statements were really out to appeal to the jury's sympathy and not necessarily to proving any of the elements of the crime charge. I mean, isn't that objectionable?
Well,
as a general matter,
as we said in our brief, we understand certainly the jury addresses there carried that risk, and in hindsight, would have been better left either unsaid or said differently. As I said, in a felon in possession case where we don't recover the firearm, and we want to prove that the defendant beyond a reasonable doubt possessed the firearm, as defined by federal law, how do we do that, right? Well, in the case where that gun was used, the fact that it was used is part and parcel of the offense. It's direct evidence of it. Yes, mentioning that, let's not forget someone was wounded. In hindsight, we shouldn't have gone there, and we won't do it again. But as I said, I don't think those things made the difference in this case. The jury didn't come back in 15 minutes and convict. They spent 2 hours for a case that took 2 days to try thinking about this case. And sometimes the speed of deliberations tells you that the jury suspended rationality. I'd also point out there was no request for a limiting instruction in this case. The defense could have said, the fact that someone was injured is coming in only to prove, the purpose the government offered it for, to prove that there was a firearm, or Mr. Battle could have offered to stipulate that whoever was depicted in that video was in fact using a firearm, and maybe that would have changed the calculus and the analysis. He didn't do that. So we had to bear our burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the person in that video, who we allege was Mr. Battle, in fact was using a and carrying a
firearm. You say there were only two objections by the defense to the use of the word girl?
That's there's only
no objection.
There's one objection when there was mention of the word stroller, right? And that was by the victim's father in response to a question. There were no objections when four or different witnesses were being asked about children or used words in the derivations of the word children. So the only objection is when I believe, and I will certainly send a letter in if I'm wrong about this, but my recollection of the record is when the father talked about pushing a stroller, that's when Mr. Corbanis got up, and then when there was a question about was an ambulance called, then there was an objection to that as being violative of the part of the order that referenced medical records. But other than those two, I don't believe there were any other objections. And even for the summation argument that referenced LW, the argument that was made in the post-trial Rule 33 motion was not that it was an appeal to the passions of the jury, the sympathy of the jury, or that it was an exacerbation of any violation of the in limine order. The argument was that it was beyond the scope of rebuttal. So even the argument on appeal has shifted. Does the court have any other questions for me?
Do you have anything?
No.
Do you have anything? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. We ask you to affirm.
All right, we'll hear rebuttal.
Sanitize is a very good word. It should be a basis of how we put this into context. Because when the trial started, one of the reasons why this stipulation was entered into was because we needed, and Judge Martini felt, the jury should know why the police showed up. So in those instances, I didn't seek sanitation because sanitation didn't need to be sought, because the purpose of it was to just establish for the jury, based on the facts, why the police came. And it came through those two witnesses. My objections came at sidebar, I think it's on page 14 of my brief, when they brought up the stroller, because now we're getting to another context. Now we're not, if we couldn't talk about the child's age, then let's put that there was a brother or sister in a stroller. So now we know there's a father holding a hand with a bunch of kids. So at that point in time, it started to have an effect. Regardless of what people may think, every trial attorney's open to their own opinions and their own trial strategies and dealing with the context of the organic nature of a trial as it develops. That point in time came. They were able to get through their witnesses that there was a child, that it was injured. That was their testimony, and that was a ruling. But then they went above it, and they kept revisiting it, kept making references to it. And when I went to make the objection about the stroller, I said, this is the fourth or fifth time they've made reference to a child or things of that nature. It's in my brief if I'm misconstruing it. But that, with the cumulative effect of everything else that went on in that case, I think was strongly prejudicial, and I think in violation, and it was used in summation, and it left the trial attorney.
Did you object to the summation?
Yes, I did. I moved for a mistrial and was denied because there was a reference made not only about rights, but LW's right that day to walk holding her father's hand in front of the jury.
Let me ask you about the transcript from the pretrial conference. It's on page 11 of your brief, the part of it that's relevant, where the judge said, you got my order indicating that at the trial there will be no mention of the age of the victim, the girl that was shot with the bullet. And then, you know, he says, and also you're not going to introduce any medical testimony.
Yeah.
And then.
And I said, that's fine.
That's fine. And then the court says, okay, the relationship obviously is fine. The girl was the daughter of the father. You have no problem with that.
Right.
And you said not after judge's order, right?
Right.
wouldn't that have been the time to say, well, by age, I mean, I don't want any reference to child, girl, you know. He seemed to be focused on age.
What he seemed to be focused on, this was before a trial. The jury was coming up. I was sitting. The judge was making last-minute decisions. I wasn't going to go back into my order. Yeah, I had the order. I know what the order meant.
Yeah.
It's fine with me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, well, this is a trial. I mean, it's nice to write a brief and get technical.
I know.
But to live and be in this situation, and this situation, based on the judge's ruling, quite frankly, I hope was going to get better after my objection, not get worse. So I don't know if there's anything else the court wants to ask, but I do believe it also contributes.
The government said there were only two objections that you made.
Well, I don't know. I thought that the one objection I made at sidebar covered the other cases under what's... I decided at that point in time I had to make the objection, and my objection was clearly stated that I had an objection to the stroller and to the references to the child, and I did that at sidebar, not in front of the jury. So I believe they were all preserved.
Anything more, Dave? Anything more, Jane? Judge Roth, anything?
No, I have
no. Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
We thank counsel for their excellent arguments today and their excellent briefing. We'll take the case under advisement and wish counsel good health and an excellent summer. And I'll ask the question.